Case number 07-1328, American Forest and Paper Association, Inc. Petitioner versus Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Mr. Seip for the petitioner, Mr. Solomon for the respondent.
While council are changing chairs, if we could have a brief break. Thanks. We have some foreign visitors with us today. I'm going to give the floor to Senior Judge Williams to welcome them.
I just want to welcome our Russian visitors who are here actually mainly inquiring into how American criminal law proceeds, but this will at least give them some variety. Dobry przyjechać.
Yeah. So don't commit any crimes while you guys are coming up here, please. All right, Mr. Seip.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm Don Seip. I'm here for the appellant AFPA in this case. I would like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal. This case comes to this Court as an appeal from an order of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission interpreting Section 210M of PURPA. In interpreting one subsection of that statute, the Commission has found that the markets that are available to QFs to relieve a utility of its mandatory purchase obligation do not have to be competitive, do not have to provide a meaningful opportunity to make sales, and in fact, that evidence of transactions within those markets are not relevant to the Commission's determination under the statute about whether those markets qualify. AFPA believes that's an unreasonable interpretation of the statute. We rely on a plain language reading of the statute without relying on rules of statutory construction or anything else. We believe the word...
Part of your case that you're setting aside the ordinary rules of statutory construction?
The ordinary rules of statutory construction demonstrate that the Commission's reading is wrong. The ordinary rules of statutory construction...
We're not throwing them out the window.
No, we use them to demonstrate that the Commission's reading is incorrect for several reasons.
Go ahead.
That's a clarification. When I go to my stockbroker and ask him to go to the market and get me the best deal that he can, He understands perfectly well that I'm not asking him to go to the grocery store and pick up a cheap cart of groceries. And that's because that conversation occurs within a context. A context where it is well understood what his role is, what my expectations are. 210M is not a snippet of isolated text. It is part of a long and ongoing conversation between the Congress and the courts and the commission.
Yes, 210M1A is part of a very specific conversation which includes 210M1B and C.
Yes.
Right? So you have to explain why the omission of the word competitive in A is utterly meaningless. The norm, the absolutely standard inference that courts draw every day of the week should not be drawn in that case.
And we have argued, Your Honor, that the reason that that inference is not legitimate in this case is because there is a long history of interpretation of the word markets, which includes that. If you apply that rule of statutory construction, for instance, to A, we'll go with A first and then we'll go with C, because C has the same problem, you'll find out. If we go with A, we must presume that it is possible to have access to markets in which QFs have no meaningful opportunity to make sales. The word access to a market has to imply an opportunity to make sales. If the word access is deprived of a word market which has some meaning, there's evidence of transactions or not, can't be argued to argue that you don't have access to a market. But let's also go down to C.
I thought the key proposition was competitive. You recognize that there are competitive and not competitive markets, right? So use of the word market alone suggests that non-competitive markets are included.
It does not under the FBA, Your Honor. The FBA, this court has been extremely clear, just like I've been extremely clear with my stockbroker. There is repeated precedent that every market relied upon by the commission must be competitive. If we look at what this rule of...
Actually, the cases you rely on don't revolve around the construction of the word market in a statute. They revolve around how the commission is to go about its duty of assuring that prices are just and reasonable.
Exactly,
which is quite a different matter.
Well, exactly, Your Honor.
But if it's exactly, then it's not a definition of the word market that's at issue in those cases.
No, it's a definition of the word just and reasonable rates, which QFs are entitled to. And that's the point. If we apply the same rule to C, for instance, we would have to presume C only uses the word competitive. We could apply the winning argument that if Congress had intended there to be a meaningful opportunity to sell in C, they would have said it, right? Because the normal interpretation is that we would read that as not being included in there for a reason.
Well, they say of comparable competitive quality.
Yes, but...
So if Congress thought that the markets... Now, let me just back up one step. You agree with the commission that the intent of A, little I, is to cover the four RTOs that they describe, MISO, PJM, ISO New England, and New York ISO.
Actually, the intent of A is to set forth a particular market structure. Currently, it covers a certain
and those
part
are the
of the
ones.
Country.
Those are the ones. Those are auction-based, day-ahead, and real-time wholesale markets, right?
Those are auction-based day-ahead. That's A1.
Right. So those are the ones that they're referring to there. And why is it unreasonable for the commission to say, well, Congress had in mind auction-based day-ahead real-time wholesale markets, and those kind of markets are competitive, at least in that area, and there's a reason, good reason to believe that they will be reasonably competitive or somewhat competitive for the wholesale markets for long-term sales.
Surprisingly.
And so when Congress says in C, comparable competitive, that doesn't mean competitive pure. That just means compared to the competitive quality of the A market.
If, in fact, Congress had presumed that the markets in A2 were competitive, there was nothing for the commission to do. There was no need to have A2 in the statute at all. It's completely superfluous. If they wanted
they
to say,
to
if they
that,
wanted to say well, RTOs.
That's not what we're still talking about. There still have to be markets for long-term sales. And FERC says that if you show bilateral contracts of greater than or equal to 1 year, that shows that. But something has to, you may argue about whether that's good enough, but there is an additional requirement.
The additional requirement is access. If you can have access to markets, the requirement in A, in all these sections, is access. Argument is that, you can have...
Not a requirement in A. That's a requirement in M1, right?
That's a requirement for all of these
markets. Right, that's a non-discriminatory access requirement.
Access to what is the question. If we presume that the issue of whether or not there are transactions in these markets that QFs can partake in is not an issue of access, and that these markets can be determined without any regard to whether they're competitive, then we may as well presume that QFs have access to the surface of the moon, because there have been transactions between the Earth and the moon, and no one is arguing, as the Commission might say, that if QFs were allowed to be astronauts, you couldn't have access to the surface of the moon. But if you drain the word markets of the idea of having real access, of having an ability to make sales, of having some quantum, identifiable quantum of competition, you can't even reasonably say that a QF has access to these markets.
You're accepting, though, that the auction-based day-ahead and real-time markets are competitive.
We are not.
You aren't.
No, we don't need to. That is for the Commission to determine. The auction-based day-ahead real-time markets, for instance, the ruling that you have to be independent.
What happens is that the suppliers offer prices, and the system essentially peels off the transactions, working up the supply curve to a point where the market clears. Isn't that basically the way the auctions work, right?
They may work that way. There may also be market dysfunction within those markets. We've had experience in California where we've had extreme market dysfunction.
California is B. Is B. It's not A, right?
California was up in A, had a real-time market.
I understand that, but it's not included by FERC under A. Am I wrong?
It's not. What we're arguing is what are the factual predicates for A? And the factual predicates for A include that market, but they also include a requirement of independence. If FERC found evidence, if I came in and I could show, and I'm not saying it's likely, it's not a question of whether I'm likely to prevail, if I could come in and show that, in fact, the independent market monitors in this were taking bribes from the utilities, if I had a QF that could show that the administration was not independent, FERC would have an obligation under the APA
We would
not win under A1 the way the Commission interprets the statute. The Commission interprets the statute that we cannot put in evidence on that, just as we cannot put in evidence on the competitiveness of the markets.
You can put in evidence on non-discriminatory access, correct?
Non-discriminatory access.
You can put in evidence on that, right?
Non-discriminatory access, that was my earlier point. If to have non-discriminatory access, you must have an opportunity to make sales.
Hold on for 1 second.
Yes.
There is a rebuttable presumption with respect to non-discriminatory access, which means you can put in evidence, right?
We cannot put in evidence on the competitiveness of the market.
I didn't ask you that question. With respect to whether there's non-discriminatory access.
Access is meaningless without an opportunity
to make sales. In the example that you just gave,
yes.
If there were bribery that prevented QF from getting in, you think that FERC would not describe that as discriminatory access?
What FERC would do is they would find that there is an independently, they have already made the ruling that MISO qualifies. Correct?
But they left open for you the possibility of showing discriminatory access. That's what it means to have a rebuttable presumption.
Under FERC's ruling, the fact that I don't have a meaningful opportunity to make a sale is not an argument that I have access.
So if I ask the FERC attorney whether it's true that bribery can't be shown by you as a means of blocking access, and he said, of course it can, then you're going to withdraw from your position?
No. Because they are also telling us that other things that are perfectly relevant, that they have an obligation to consider under the APA, are not relevant. For instance, down below, ELCON actually did try to put in evidence that the markets were non-competitive. What the Commission ruled was, in fact, not that they had looked at that evidence and found it wanting, not that they had looked and found that these markets were competitive. What they found, in fact, was that was inapposite, as in irrelevant, as in we will not look at it.
That follows from their construction of A in the context of A, B, and C.
So the question of access, If a QF comes in and says, we do not have access to these markets because we do not have any opportunity to make sales, whether it's because it's bribery, whether it's because there's no market opportunity, they cannot put in that evidence under FERC's ruling. FERC has said such evidence is inapposite, and it drains the word access of meaning. It drains the word markets of meaning.
Is that one of the suppliers in the market is bribing the ISO?
That's just one example of something that you might be able to show.
Let's stick with that. And, sure. And you're saying that under what FERC has said, that's irrelevant to the question of whether there's non-discriminatory access?
FERC has literally told you that it does not want to be relitigating over and over again whether these markets are independent. It has said that in its brief. It has pled that.
Just to stick with this hypothetical.
Which means it won't.
You've given us. FERC,
yes.
FERC would say in terms of whether there's non-discriminatory access, what you have alleged is irrelevant.
What FERC has said is there is no reason to relitigate over and over again whether it satisfies the requirements of A1. They have ruled that, which means I take it, if you take them at their word, not at what he may say when he comes up here, the basis of his decision is that, no, I cannot come in and challenge that. That is an irrebuttable presumption. Number one, that they are independent. Number two, that this is not a rebuttable presumption. And if I cannot argue under access that I cannot have access to a meaningful opportunity to make sales, then what am I arguing? And I can't argue that they're not independent because that's an irrebuttable presumption. And there's no content to the word markets that I can appeal to. What am I allowed to come in and argue as a QF? How do I demonstrate that I don't have access to markets that don't give me any meaningful opportunity? Isn't that what I'm supposed to be showing FERC, that I don't have a meaningful opportunity to make a sale?
Okay, we'll give a chance for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Get her hear from FERC.
May it please the court, Robert Solomon for the commission. Turning to the last point first, yes, of course, the commission would consider any evidence proffered, certainly bribery, concerning non-discriminatory access to the markets defined in A, B, and C. You can find this in our regulations, 18 CFR section 292.309. E. There's some confusion with respect to non-discriminatory access to the statutorily defined markets and the markets themselves. But the statute focuses on non-discriminatory access to certain types of markets defined in A, B, and C, and what the Commission has determined in that regulation is that the qualifying facility may rebut the presumption by showing inter alia evidence of transmission constraints that hinder the ability of the qualifying facility to reach the enumerated markets, or operational circumstances peculiar to that particular qualifying facility that might have the same effect.
What about use a term I just learned, A Romanet 2, namely wholesale markets for long-term sales of capacity and electric energy. That the determination that the four RTOs fit there was based on the existence of bilateral contracts, right?
Yes.
What if counsel came in with evidence that while there may have been bilateral contracts last year, there haven't been any since, and there was only one, and there are no other bilateral contracts? Would they be able to put in that evidence, or is this a permanent decision?
I don't think it is permanent, and I think the QF would be able to put in that type of information. The Commission did make the generic finding in its rulemaking last year that the four types of regional transmission organizations, based upon the facts in place at the time the agency made the generic finding, satisfies the requirements of 210 1A. But presumably, if those facts have changed, and the relevant facts would, of course, be whether there are independently administered, auction-based, day-ahead, real-time markets with at least some indicia of long-term sales of capacity and electric energy, certainly the qualifying facility, either in response to electric utility filing or in a complaint or a filing to reinstate the mandatory purchase obligation, would be able to make that showing.
That would come under, I don't know, section or subsection M4?
Yes.
As a change in conditions?
Yes, as a change in conditions, that the circumstances, the conditions set forth in subparagraphs A, B, or C, which relieve the obligation to purchase, are no longer met. The Commission disagrees with petitioner. The Commission is not draining the statute of any meaning. The Commission is trying to give meaning and effect to the markets identified in A, B, and C. Those markets are identified with remarkable specificity and remarkable understanding of current markets as they have developed in the last 30 years of PURPA. The petitioner argues that the agency believes that competition is irrelevant. As the Commission said in the rehearing order, paragraphs 43 to 45, that's pages 256 to 258 of the joint appendix, the Commission believes that the Congress believes that, in fact, the markets identified in A are competitive. Judge Garland, you are correct. The reference to comparable competitive quality in C does not suggest that the markets in A are just as competitive as the markets in B. As you indicated, the markets in A may be reasonably or somewhat competitive, but the Commission believes that Congress presumes, based upon the specificity of the language employed and the reference to comparable competitive quality, that in fact the markets identified in A do have a competitive quality.
What was the exact section of part of 309 that you cited to deal with Mr. Seip's, the hypothetical that Mr. Seip and we had been dealing with at the close of his argument?
I cited to 18 CFR 292.309E. B, C, D, and E refer to the rebuttable presumptions that the Commission has designed in this case. First of all, Judge Garland, there was a question as to the status of California. California does not fall into A. California falls into BI. The Commission did not make a rebuttable presumption as to B2.
California and the Southwest Power Pool both.
Correct.
What about their argument that you're really not giving anything more to A little double little I by merely saying that? How many bilateral, let me put it another way, how many bilateral contracts did the Commission find?
The Commission did not make a finding of a particular number, but the Commission found, and none of the many parties to this proceeding disagreed, that in fact there are bilateral contracts for long-term sales of capacity and electric energy. We know this because these types of transactions have to be reported to the agency, and again, none of the parties disagree with this. The agency.
There's a difference between saying there are bilateral contracts and there are a lot, or even enough to indicate there's a market. A single bilateral contract, I suppose, wouldn't be enough, or would it? Do you think that's enough to establish that there's a wholesale market?
I would say that one would be enough, but what the Commission found is little II is influenced by little I. The commission...
I wish you'd explain exactly the causal relationship there.
Well, the commission believes that there is a causal relationship between the independently administered auction-based day-ahead and real-time markets enumerated in I and the wholesale markets in double I. As the commission said in its final rule on page 154 and reiterated in its rehearing order on page 241, the commission believes that the existence of the markets in I will help promote the development of the markets in double I, in particular, the day ahead and the real-time markets are organized markets.
The mechanism of that influence is what exactly?
Well, the mechanism is that the real-time day ahead markets provide a spot market benchmark that the commission believes that participants in the long-term market can use for purposes of negotiating long-term rates.
Price disclosure.
Yes, price disclosure, as well as backstopping ability in the long-term market should, for operational or economic reasons, the long-term supplier wish to go into the short-term markets. You do have a very liquid short-term market to allow the long-term supplier to take advantage of. Finally, with respect to generic findings and rebuttable presumptions, the agency does have the ability in 210A to prescribe and from time to time revise such rules as it determines necessary. And with respect to Section 210M3, which is the particular provision involving commission review, all that section does is provide for an electric utility filing the setting forth the factual basis and notice and comment. Those words do not preclude generic findings and rebuttable presumptions. And in particular, the last part of that section that petitioner does not reference is the fact that the agency needs to make a decision within 90 days. The Congress directed the agency to act in a timely and expedited manner, and the generic findings and the rebuttable presumptions allow the agency to do precisely that.
And the question,
Mr. Sipes says that he can't rebut this presumption unless he's able to show the competitiveness of the market. Now, does the agency's finding preclude that kind of evidence?
The agency's findings preclude that type of showing if nothing has changed since the time of the agency's generic finding. The agency believed that it was actually fair to qualifying facilities and fair to electric utilities to make the findings as to the composition of the market in the generic rulemaking proceeding, because, of course, in the generic rulemaking proceeding, you had the entire qualifying facility and electric utility industry present. At some point, the agency had to make a generic finding as to the markets enumerated in A, B, or C, and if the commission had not done that in the rulemaking proceeding, it would have done so in the first adjudication presented to it, in which you would have only had the defined electric utility and the defined qualifying facility.
Can I return again to Mr. Sipes' bribery hypothetical, and particularly in the context of 309E? I take it that your answer critically depends on the words inter alia, because the specific things that are mentioned in terms of lack of access are operational characteristics of the QF or transmission constraints. Bribery does not seem to fit readily into either of those. Am I right?
Yes, but...
I think it's a little hard to work out the bribery scenario.
Right, because...
practical matter, once it's found, presumably action will occur to remove the bribe taker.
That is correct, because bribery is neither operational characteristics nor transmission constraints. I should point out, with respect to bribery or market manipulation or any type of anti-competitive effect, the advantage of the markets identified in A little I, the day-ahead real-time wholesale markets, is in fact you have market monitors in place to ferret out that type of bribery, and you have market mitigation in place of the type that perhaps you might not have in markets B and C to remediate any such bribery of the type referenced by petitioner.
AFPA argues that they need market-based rates, otherwise they don't get just and reasonable rates. Is it open to QF to file a complaint that the rates aren't just and reasonable in a particular situation or not?
Yes, but we're moving several steps ahead. All this rulemaking does is enumerate the circumstances in which the mandatory purchase obligation is rescinded. The qualifying facility remains the qualifying facility. The qualifying facility has the advantage of several exemptions under the Federal Power Act, but a qualifying facility that is greater than 20 megawatts still has to make a filing under the Federal Power Act, under Section 205 of that Act, demonstrating that if it wants to sell at market-based rates, it has to have no market power or has to have effectively mitigated any market power. This is not a Federal Power Act just and reasonable case yet. It may be if the qualifying facility loses the mandatory purchase obligation, but that is a determination for a later time and a later case.
That's with respect to the obligation to purchase, right? I'm asking,
yes.
With respect to the obligation to purchase, they could in a later time, in a later case.
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Seip, no time left, but we'll give you 2 more minutes. Could you just comment on that last point? I wasn't exactly clear.
On which last point?
About whether you have an opportunity later to make a just and reasonable rates claim.
The opportunity later to make a just and reasonable rates claim under 206 is outside of 210M. The whole point of 210M was to give QFs a particular remedy for unjust and reasonable rates. And removing that particular remedy for unjust and reasonable rates is not justified by the fact that we can come back under some other section of the statute and argue that we should be treated like any other generator. The whole purpose of PURPA was to create a special rule that would allow a special type of relief, and we are still under those rules. I don't know which order I'm arguing against here. In answer to your question, Your Honor, he told you we could put in evidence. In answer to your question, he told you that it would be precluded. It's very clear that the evidence is precluded under their order. It's very clear they did not make a generic finding that these markets are competitive. They made a generic finding that competitiveness is not important. It's not an issue. They did not take evidence and find these markets were competitive. They did not look at any particular level of transactions. They are absolutely clear that evidence of transactions are irrelevant, and if we raise them, they will be considered irrelevant. And when Elcon did, they acted on it and considered it an apposite. There is no substance to a market which does not allow meaningful access, meaningful opportunity to sell. There is no substance to the word access.
I'm sorry, what's your scenario in which you have the auction markets that satisfy A1? There's no operational problem with the QF in terms of supplying that market. There's no transmission constraint. What's the difficulty?
The difficulty lies specifically with long-term sales, not with short-term sales, but with finding a long-term buyer in a market which is dominated by utilities and utility affiliates, just as it was under the original PURPA. The difficulty is, and the issue is, not whether we will be able to prove that there is, in fact, a lack of a competitive opportunity. That's not the issue before this court. We're not here arguing, trying to convince you the facts. Elcon tried to argue the facts below. We think it's significant when they tried to argue the facts. They were told they were irrelevant. The question is it relevant? And we believe that it is. We believe that those facts, you know, we haven't repealed the Administrative Procedures Act. This commission retains an obligation to listen to relevant evidence if it's brought forward, and they have told you they will not. He has told you specifically he will not.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Seip. Thank you, Mr. Solomon. The case will be submitted.